Judy Rebick supports Rabble because
Rabble's one of the very few spaces anywhere that you get a variety of views. All the new movements that emerged in Canada, whether it was Idle No More, the Maple Spring, the first place they appear is on Rabble.
Pull the plug on Harper. Support Rabble today.
This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Hello and welcome to Rabble Radio. I'm Megan Perry. As we all know, activism is very serious work, and that's why we need art. This episode, we are also welcoming a new voice to the program. Victoria Fenner is the new executive producer of the Rabble Podcast Network and of this podcast. She's been podcasting with the network for many years. She is a community radio veteran and an audio artist in her own right. What do you think, Victoria?
Thanks a lot for that introduction, Megan. And I'm really, really excited to be captaining this ship of sound. So why don't we begin? It's the end of June, and this month on Rabble Radio, we're going to kick back and we're going to celebrate a little bit. But we're still going to change the world. Today's theme is celebratory activism. And we're going to hear about what some of our artists are doing to change our world and our country.
June is Pride Month across North America, and on today's show, we'll go to Vancouver and hear from the Femme City Choir. They're a relatively new group that is redefining the word femme. We'll also hear from the Howl Arts Collective in Montreal, who are firm believers that culture, arts, creativity, and creation are always important ingredients in the recipe for social change.
And here at Rabble, we believe that too. We've been having parties to celebrate our 13th anniversary this month. And we'll take you to the launch of our book, The Year of Living Consciously, which was held at the Parliament Pub in Ottawa on June 17th. We'll introduce you to some of the people who think we're doing a great job here at Rabble.
And it's annual donor drive time at Rabble.ca. So while you're listening, you could go over to Rabble.ca/donate and show how much you appreciate the independent journalism that Rabble.ca does. It's Rabble.ca/donate. It's sometimes said that choral singing is a perfect example of how to work in groups. In a good choir, everyone sings their own part, nobody dominates, and a beautiful new sound is created where all voices blend together. The Femme City Choir in Vancouver takes the metaphor a few steps further. It's a choir that sings in sweet harmony to celebrate difference.
In their own words, this choir is an all-genders, queer, and trans-centered femme-fabulous singing extravaganza. Sounds exciting. Celebrating and elevating self-identified femness through song. That's what they do. Rabble.ca podcast, The F Word, caught up with two of the choir's co-organizers, Lau Sequins and Kate Monster, and asked them to describe what makes them unique. They spoke to F Word host Arianna Bearer.
Anyone who feels femme in any way, no matter what their gender is or identities or whatever, this is a space where they can come and express that femness and explore it with other femmes, and we do it through song, but also like just hanging out and making new friends. And I know a lot of us, like both of us included, have made a lot of new friends because of this, and there isn't a lot of like femme organizing space in this city, and so it's created, I think, a good place for people to just meet people and hang out and have some fun together, I think.
Totally. And be seen too, I think, is a big part of it, right? Because femme invisibility is a huge thing in the queer community, especially in Vancouver, I sense, although really
probably everywhere.
Probably everywhere. And so I think it's a really awesome opportunity for folks to like see each other and be seen like as a group and have that like social space to have some of those shared experiences and identities.
Can you say a little bit about what femme means to you?
Well, we're going to do, I think, a piece like when we at the actual event of having kind of each individual member write about what femme means to them, because it does mean very different things to everybody in the choir. People express their feminism very differently, and people have all sorts of different genders and intersecting identities and stuff like that. For me personally, feminist is definitely an evolving meaning and identity for me, and not something that I've always been like, yeah, I'm a queer femme, blah 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 blah. But right now it's kind of like feeling to me like it's a really conscious femininity, and the way that I feel about myself on the inside, but also how I'm presenting that in a way that changes all the time. And sometimes I'm looking one way one day, and sometimes the next day I look totally different. And to me, that's all kind of feminist. I just bought a pair of heels for the first time in 10 years, which is feeling really femme to me, but also my bow tie feels really femme to me. So like, kind of all of it. I'm not doing a very good job explaining this. Well, it's because it's just so different. And like, basically, I just, for me, it's like a really conscious femininity that I'm kind of using and I'm proud of. And I want to assert that femininity because I feel like that's a part of me, and that it isn't something that I want to be kind of, I don't want that identity to be lost. And I feel like it is in the big picture of the world, and also in my immediate, mm-hmm. like my actual community and life.
And femininity yeah. is pretty devalued in patriarchal society, yeah. in any body.
For sure. Well, and that's the thing too, is I think like to really strongly say that like, femness isn't tied to femaleness or to womanness or to anything. It's tied to femininity, and I, for me anyways, and it's tied to a really, like what Kate said, a really conscious like examination of what femininity means. So it's not like feeling like it's getting able to choose to be feminine, I think, and to feel really awesome about that, and to really consciously be like, no, femininity feels good for me in these ways, and whatever those ways are, I think look like 100 different ways for 100 different people, right? But really getting to be like, yeah, this is how I choose to be, and I don't feel like it's being forced upon me by like the beauty norms of society or whatever, right? But that it's like, I feel really positive about this. Like, I know for me, when I came out, I like cut off all my hair and wore boys' clothes for like 3 years, and not that there's anything wrong with that, but because like I didn't have a role model in, like, I didn't think that you could be queer without like having short hair and like dressing kind of butchy, right? Which is like what I did for 3 years, which like I'm glad I had that experience, but it wasn't me and it never felt like me. It felt like I was wearing a costume, but I didn't know that there was any other way that you could be queer because I didn't see it. And so for me, I just, like, I'm a youth worker and I work with queer youth. And for me to just think that, like, maybe some of the queer youth that I work with would get to, like, come to Femstravaganza and see role models that look different than the prescribed queer norm, like, that is so heartwarming to me because I wish that I had that. I never saw that, ever.
Can you say a little bit more about femme invisibility?
It sucks. Totally. So I think, like, kind of what is femme invisibility? I mean, yeah. So femme invisibility being, like, the idea that femmes aren't seen as queer, because we don't necessarily, some of us, and this isn't true for every femme, but I think many femmes feel kind of an invisibility because they don't necessarily ascribe to, like, the queer aesthetic or, like, the queer look, and so aren't necessarily seen as queer, both by, like, the greater society, but also by, like, our own communities. I think we're often not recognized, and there's a lot of... So that's, like, one way that femme invisibility manifests. I think there's also, like... I think queer communities reproduce a lot of the things that happen in, like, greater patriarchal, misogynistic society, where, like, femmes do a lot of the invisible labor in queer communities and a lot of the emotional labor and a lot of the, like, kind of background organizing, but aren't really seen as, like, the faces of queerness. So we like to change that, hopefully.
What is your favorite part?
Oh, just being here.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the 2 hours every Thursday is just really, it's really a fun energy. Like, even if some weeks people are really tired, or some weeks everyone can't stop talking and I'm like shouting over everybody trying to get everyone's extension. But really, I think just being here is really nice for me. I don't know about you.
I like echo that completely. And I think on a personal level for me, it's really... fulfilling and awesome to do this with my best friend. Like that.
Oh. I mean, yeah, Lau's the best part of it.
No, but like I've done a lot of organizing in my life, and it's really nice to do something musical, first of all, because that hasn't personally been in my life for a while, and it's really lovely to do it with your femme bestie who you've been friends with forever. It's really exciting.
It's a pretty like dream organizing situation, I think, to be able to do it with your best friends
and like
but
organize.
Not get sick of each other and never really hate each other, which is great.
Yeah,
which I think only happens because we've been like we grew up in a small town together. We've been best friends since we were like 13. Mm-hmm. We have a weird kind of bonding happening. That makes it work.
It's true. It's true. But no, it's the space. It's being in the space and being with everyone in the choir. Like the energy is always just so awesome in the room.
And they bring like the folks bring so much to it. Like they bring like their hearts and their emotions, and sometimes they have really bad days and sometimes they have really good days, and they put so much into it. It's just like I'm just like standing there like taking it all in, being like, ah, this is so amazing. You know?
Yeah.
And what have people been saying about their experiences with the group? What is it, what impact has it had on their lives or as femme?
Not to toot our own horns, but pretty amazing.
Yeah, I mean, I've heard amazing things. Like, I saw just on Facebook today that someone was like, TGIT, like, thank God it's Thursday. And then underneath in brackets was like, Femme Choir, like, Femme City Choir. So that's really cool. Like, I think it's a piece in the week that people really look forward to.
Tell me more about how it differs from your other experiences of activism in the city.
Okay. I think that there's something awesome about doing celebratory activism. And I've done celebratory activism in the past, and I've always found it to be really cool, but I haven't done it in quite a few years. And it's so cool to create something that's like joyful noise, that's like joyful celebration, rather than like fighting against something, if that makes sense. And I think you need both. Like, I don't think that one is any better than the other or one is like more deserving. I think that for me personally, I'm in a place in my life where not reactive organizing, that's not the right word because that's not always what it is, but fighting oppression by focusing on the oppression to me is like on a personal level become like a little bit exhausting, and I've needed to take a step back, and so kind of trying to turn it around by putting something joyful out into the world that like serves people and serves our community and serves me and serves like the people I love, and I feel like represents a lot of ways, not always obviously, but represents that.
I was thinking about the kinds of things that people do in their communities that make people want to get out of bed in the morning and show up for other people and stay alive through really oppressive circumstances. We live in really hard society for so many people, and for them to have like a Thursday every week.
It's not even a Friday. It's a Thursday.
It's a Thursday.
Yeah.
Where they can go somewhere and be seen, as you said, and understood, and have community, and have creative joy is really spectacular.
Totally.
And that was Arianna Bearer of the F Word speaking to co-organizers Lau Sequins and Kate Monster of the Vancouver's Femme City Choir. And you can hear more from the choir at the F Word. Click the F Word link at rabble.ca/podcasts. And next up, Talking Radical Radio tells us about the Howl Arts Collective. The members of this Montreal-based group are firm believers that culture and arts are always integral to movements for change. Stefan Christoph of the Howl Arts Collective talked to Scott Nye about radical arts, movements, and memory.
We do projects that directly work in an artistic way, but are also linked to frontline social movements, whether it's anti-gentrification struggles or migrant justice movements or more generally movements for social and economic justice. So most of us involved in this project are both artists and activists, and we actually don't see a distinction between the two, and we wanted to create a space where the artistic practice that I feel is so central to the history of popular movements here in Quebec, but also globally, can be very much the focus of the project, and that's really centrally what it is about. I moved to Montreal just at the turn of the century, around 2000. At the time, there was a burgeoning protest movements, many different movements that, of course, come out of a long history of protest movements in Quebec. And these were protest movements historically that simply weren't asking for reforms of the electoral system or the political process, but movements that really were about transformative social change, that were really looking at the roots of injustice, colonial and capitalist realities that, you know, have shaped Quebec for so long. So the movements that were taking place around 1999-2000 were taking place also in a global context, where we saw the rise of movements globally against neoliberal capitalism, corporate globalization. So right after the protests in Seattle in the fall of 1999, here in Montreal, there was a mobilization taking place, both to oppose a meeting of the G20 summit, which was one of the first meetings of the G20 that took place in Montreal in 2000. And also there was a mobilization taking place in opposition to the Free Trade Area of the Americas that was having a summit in Quebec City in April 2001. That was a much broader continental mobilization. So, of course, within both of those grassroots processes, there was a lot of arts. There was a lot of creative aspects to these mobilizations, from street theater to protest puppets, but then also the involvement of a lot of local musicians and artists in Montreal, everything from street art to, you know, post-rock music. And so that was really sort of the ambiance. I had always, of course, been interested in frontline social movements and also the arts, but it was really great to be in Montreal at a time where those two things were really converging in a real way. And my involvement in the mobilization towards the Summit of the Americas in Quebec City in April 2001 really focused on the arts, including we held a poetry reading in Quebec City called Free Verses of the Americas. And we invited poets actually from all over who were going to be in Quebec City for the protest to participate. You know, at the time, it was really interesting to see the way that these different efforts were converging, anti-capitalist protests and radical arts. That's basically the context where I first was able to explore these things in a real way, in a frontline way. So Howl really formed at that time. There was events that we organized in New York City, in Halifax, in Toronto, and here in Montreal, really through a grassroots network. And we had a festival called the Howl Festival of Art and Revolution. And we had a whole series of different events in those cities I mentioned, where I was collaborating with artists and activists in different places. After a few years, I got really deeply involved in grassroots struggles in Montreal. We're talking about migrant justice groups like No One Is Illegal. I was around at that group's formation, and also other protest movements that were forming at the time around housing rights, anti-poverty groups. So for a long time, I have to be honest with you, I was so enwrapped in the organizational details of frontline campaigns where we were directly involved in, you know, the details of injustice in people's lives and in communities, meaning like casework, you know, frontline casework. That type of casework really took a great deal of focus. And I have to say, I was very young. So it was a totally overwhelming experience, but one where I learned a lot. So for quite a few years, I was so involved at that sort of level that I really didn't have the time to explore these ideas around art and activism. And I really, I'd say, put those things to the side. I always sort of felt that it was important, but I had a hard time for a long time reconciling how frontline organizing work, which I was doing, could relate to the more artistic things that I wanted to also express. So luckily, over time, and especially around the Quebec student strike almost a decade later, in 2011-2010 is when the organizing began for that, but of course the strike really took place in 2012. Again, we saw this massive creative expression, and an artistic aspect to that uprising, I think, is an accurate way of describing what happened here. And given that I was involved and around that process of mobilization towards the protests in 2012 again, I was really excited to see the artistic aspect really come to life. I worked with a group of comrades, of friends at the time, who were also artists but were directly involved in the movement. And what we did is we formed an arts collective called Howl, which was based on the idea that I had originally worked on with other comrades about a decade before, but was sort of reformed in the context of that upheaval and the strike that had happened more recently in Quebec. And since then, we have been working consistently to explore what art and activism can do together.
And tell me a little bit about the other folks in the collective. Have their trajectories been similar to yours, or is there a broader range of people in politics that are feeding into the collective?
It's broader in terms of age, for sure. You have people whose first experience with political protest movements was around the strike in 2012, like their first frontline experience. And then there's people more from my generation that really had their political education take place during the anti-globalization movement. And then, of course, people are from, you know, all sorts of different backgrounds. It's really a diverse group that is tight. It's very modest in size, but we're sort of a group based on affinity. We are a small arts collective. And what we do mainly when we do different projects is we coordinate with different groups and campaigns. So, for example, we just had a festival here in Montreal, and we opened the festival with a benefit for the campaign for missing and murdered Aboriginal women. So the group here in Montreal who is really organizing a lot of things around that is called Missing Justice. We partnered with that group to organize a benefit for Missing Justice and co-organize a cultural event together, which featured many Aboriginal Indigenous artists. So as a small collective, we reach out to different groups to co-organize projects.
Tell me in a little bit more detail about some of these concrete cultural products that the collective or members of the collective have produced.
One thing that we've been working on is to make zines, so little booklets, basically. And these are booklets not written by experts, not written by academics, but booklets by frontline social activists. So, for example, one project we recently did was with the Immigrant Workers Center, and we worked with an activist there named Mustafa Hanawi to put together a booklet of his writings and analysis based on frontline experiences organizing with immigrant workers here in our city. And it sort of is an analysis of the economic crisis in Canada for working people, poor people, marginalized communities, especially as austerity measures are imposed. Another booklet we did was one that I worked on, which was collecting writings from around the Quebec student uprising, putting that into English, because there's a very important amount of analysis and information around what happened here in Quebec during the student strike that I feel is missing in translation. We also worked with a feminist street art collective called Off Mural. So we worked with them to put together a series of texts by different artists who are involved in the Off Mural group. So as I mentioned before, these booklets attempt to bring into physical form, into text, the ideas of social activists, but also artists who are not recognized or not given voice in mainstream artistic circles or in regards to social activists in mainstream political narratives.
That was Stefan Christoph speaking to Scott Nye from Talking Radical Radio. You can hear the whole conversation by going to Talking Radical Radio at the Rabble Podcast Network. That's rabble.ca/podcasts. Thanks, Scott.
And a lot of the ideas that Scott and Stefan talked about are also bang on when it comes to rabble.ca. We've been doing our own celebrating this month. It's the 13th anniversary of rabble.ca, and we've just released a new book, The Best of Rabble, 2014 edition, The Art of Living Consciously. Our Ottawa launch was held on June 17th at the Parliament Pub.
It was a great opportunity to connect with some of our Ottawa supporters, together with fabulous music by our own Parliament Hill reporter Carl Nirenberg and friends. It was a great time.
And for those of you who couldn't be there, I put together some of the sounds and the voices from the event. And the first voice you'll hear is from publisher of Rabble.ca, Kim Elliott.
What happened around the time of Rabble's inception was the National Post came about. And then suddenly there wasn't just the corporate based Globe and Mail as a national publication. Here was a stridently right-wing publication. So the need to have a left progressive version of a media outlet became that much more important. The story is that people were talking about it, and a group of people came together who were disenchanted mainstream media journalists and technology advocates from the open source world, where suddenly this opportunity was arising. I mean, it sounds almost incredible to say now, given how important the internet is, but back in 2000, it was McNew, and there was no online media at that point. We brought together this fascinating group of people who saw the potential of the internet to bring people together and to create a national media that was very low cost and that could bring all kinds of voices together from across the country.
Thank you so much for coming to the launch of this book, The Best of Rabble, the 2014 edition. There's wonderful stuff in this book. If you haven't read it already, you should grab one. We have some special guests tonight, and the first speaker that I'd like to call up is Nathan Cullen. He's the Member of Parliament for the Rani Mesquina Buckley Valley. Nathan's currently the finance critic for the NDP. Probably most of you know him already, but Nathan, do you want to come up and say a few words?
Absolutely. Yay, Nathan!
Thanks, everybody. It's, thank you for welcoming me. Thanks to all of you for supporting this amazing institution. I was talking to Kim earlier about what should the pitch be in talking to you about helping support Rabble even further, and the idea of a balanced media diet I quite like. This idea that Rabble fits part of the conversation that is so often lacking with the traditional media sources, particularly in this city, but I'd argue right across Canada. As we struggle with some of the big questions of our time.
Thank you so much.
I think that the thing that has always struck me about Rabble, and I've been with Rabble since about 2005, first as the podcast producer and now as editor-in-chief, and I think that the thing that has always struck me about it has been the community that comes together at Rabble. So it's activists of all stripes coming together to create dialogue about progressive change in Canada, and I think a big part of that is labor and labor voices. And so, if I may, I'd like to call Hassan Youssef. He's the newly elected president of the Canadian
Labour. First of all, it's an honor to be here with friends, of course. But more importantly, I think the work that Bravo does is invaluable. I don't think I need to say more than that in terms of the coverage we get, the issues that you take the time to, of course, devote attention to is very critical for us in the labor movement. But more importantly, I think we're among friends here. We recognize fundamentally if we're going to build a progressive country, we need to have a progressive media in this country. And Rabble plays an important role in that for Alvin.
Thank you so much.
My name is Carol Hughes, Member of Parliament for Algoma, Manitoulin, Campus, Casing, and I support Rabble just because it's actually a great avenue for media, and it really tells it the way it should be told. So really appreciate all that they do to promote the issues and to advocate for change.
I'm Charlie Angus, Member of Parliament for Timmins, James Bay, and the frontman for the Grievous Angels. We need alternative voices in the media. It's getting smaller and smaller gene pool of opinions all the time, and we need progressive views. And so I'm out here to say thanks, Rabble.
I'm Libby Davies. I'm the Member of Parliament for Vancouver East, and I'm a longtime supporter and reader of Rabble. And what I find is that I really need to get kind of the Rabble take on things. You can't rely on the corporate media. Rabble covers a lot of issues that are grassroots, that are about social movements, about the labor movement, and I don't necessarily get that in the corporate media, so it's where I get my news.
My name is Murray Rankin. I'm the Member of Parliament for Victoria, British Columbia. And I think press freedom is endangered in our country. I think the number of outlets doing critical analysis of the news is diminished to virtually none. And that's where Rabble comes in. I look to Rabble and a few other select sources across the country for a balance in the news that I receive.
My name is Nikki Ashton, and I'm the Member of Parliament for Churchill, which is Northern Manitoba. And why should people support Rabble? Why not? Rabble is a source, a key source for me to get my news. And I follow on Twitter and on Facebook those that share Rabble articles on a regular basis. I share them. The Rabble, no question, has a pulse on what's going on in Parliament in a way that that others don't see. And I think it's so critical that. That in this day and age, with the kind of media consolidation that we see and a toxic right-wing agenda in our country, that we have the voices of Rabble speaking out about how things really are, and relaying, more importantly, that, I mean, we can see it in Parliament, but relaying that information to people out across the country.
And that was a recap of what you missed at the Parliament Pub in Ottawa on June 17th. The music was by our own Parliament Hill reporter, Carl Nirenberg, and his merry band, one of whom is Straight Goods publisher Ish Teilheimer, and they were joined by drummer Dan Quinlan. The event was the launch of the Best of Rabble 2014, the Year of Living Consciously. We met up with some old friends, and some new friends, and we also raised some money that is needed so we can keep bringing you the best in independent journalism in days, months, and years to come.
Now, as Victoria said, Rabble.ca does depend on donations from supporters to keep us going. It's not too expensive. For just the price of a coffee or two, you can help keep us running. The address you should visit to become a supporter is rabble.ca/donate.
And that brings us to the end of this edition of Rabble Radio. Thanks today to the podcasters who added their voices to this program, specifically the F Word Collective and also Scott Nye of Talking Radical Radio.
The executive producer of Rabble Radio is Victoria Fenner, and I'm Megan Perry. We'll both be back next episode. Don't forget to donate at rabble.ca/donate if you can.
Be sure to check out our many other podcasts too on the Rabble Podcast Network. Go to rabble.ca/podcasts.